from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Western New York, where a dying newspaper saw a dramatic turn of events. You see, the Buffalo Star was starving for attention, trying to stay relevant, and it just so happened that a dark horse politician was also desperate for the spotlight. How do these two ideas intertwine? Well, you're going to have a chance to find out this coming weekend. There's a new play called The Prestitutes. Prestitutes, not prostitutes. Prestitutes debuts at the MUC, the Multi-Use Cultural Community Center in Rochester. The show was written by Dave Andreotta, Democrat and Chronicle columnist, and it includes plenty of humor as well as a bit of commentary on the state of journalism and politics. How much truth is Mr. Andreotta trying to reveal in his show? Maybe we'll find out this hour. Dave is spending most of the week in his native Canada, but is kind enough to join us by phone. Dave, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, Evan. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Happy belated Canada Day to you, Dave.
Thank you, and happy 4th to everyone there.
Yeah, very good. And in studio, we've got a filled studio as well. Julie Phillip is here. She's the senior engagement editor from the Democrat and Chronicle. She will be calling balls and strikes for how realistic Dave's show is. Julie, welcome
to you. Oh, my.
Thank you for being here, Julie. Jeff Moon's here. He's the director of the Prestitutes. Jeff, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And Jim Memmott's here. He is a longtime journalist with the Democrat and Chronicle. He's a retired senior editor. He's the remarkable Rochester columnist and a professor at the University of Rochester. Jim, welcome to you.
Thank you, Dave, or Evan.
Yes, and you can say hi to Dave.
Hello
as well.
To David.
Longtime
yes.
friends
Dave.
There. So Dave is going to be back at the end of the week as the show gets off the ground. But Dave, take me back to the beginning here. This show was in your mind and finally hit the page a number of years ago now, right?
Yeah, I really began writing it in 2011, and I've been interested and involved in local theater for quite some time. I first relocated to Rochester in 2007, and immediately became involved in the local theater scene. It was sort of reignited a passion of mine from many years earlier that I hadn't had the time to get involved in other places that I lived. In Rochester, I just found to be so warm and welcoming in that sense. And so I'd been acting in some plays and been trying my hand at some writing. I had done some playwriting and screenwriting earlier with, you know, little to no success, which is to say I finished plays and screenplays, but, you know, never got them produced or to the point of a staged reading anywhere, which is a reading in which actors will act out the play with script in hand, with moderate rehearsal time.
Sure.
And so in 2011, this the seed of this play came to me, and I penned it and entered it in a contest, a regional writers' showcase sponsored by Jiva and Writers and Books, and it won that. Was able to get a reading at Jiva in front of a great crowd. I'm going to say about 100 people were there, and it got selected to move on to Jiva's Festival of New Plays that fall in 2012, again for another staged reading. And for those of your audience who might not know what a stage reading is, again, it's a script in hand reading of the play. But it's really intended for the playwright to see what works and what doesn't work. I mean, what works in someone's head doesn't necessarily translate to the page or to the audience. And both of those readings were invaluable to me. I saw a lot of things that did work and a few things that didn't work and made the appropriate changes. But yeah, so this has really been a labor of love. It's four years in the works, if you will. And to fast forward to how we got to today, Everyone's Theater Company, which Jeff is a part of and is directing the show, he can speak more to that part of it, but they had a call for entries, I'm going to say 6 or 7 months ago. Jeff could maybe correct me on that, but
that's
I want
right.
to say 6 or 7 months ago. They had a call for entries looking for local playwrights. I submitted. They selected mine, and the rest is history. They've been in rehearsals. I know I've been working hard at it, and I'm really, really eager to see this story come to life on the stage.
You can see it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday performances at the MUC start at 7:30 p.m. Sunday, it's a 1 p.m. matinee. And you can find out a lot more at muck.org, M-U-C-C-C.org, or everyonestheater.com. By the way, Jeff, what is Everyone's Theater Company?
Everyone's Theater Company is one of the many, many
community theater groups in town. They've done mostly musicals over the last few years, and this is and some festivals of one acts that showcase local playwrights like David. This is David's first full boat production of any of his shows, so congratulations, David.
Thank you.
We're very happy to be a part of celebrating the local talent in town, both for playwrights and actors and tech people as well. And we're really excited about it.
All right, Dave, so peel it back a little bit. What's the story behind The Prestitutes?
Okay, so, well, in a nutshell, it's a comedy, and it's a farce, and it's very plot-driven. I mean, any good story, I think, has characters that change over time, and some of these characters do. Some of them, however, stay static. Like I said, it's mostly a plot-driven play, and essentially, to sum it up in a nutshell, it's the staff of a dying newspaper, sort of a staid and old-fashioned, lumbering newspaper that can't adjust to the digital age, is being threatened, not being threatened, has been told that it will shut down in a week's time. And this is happening as we're leading up to a gubernatorial election in New York, and someone from Native Buffalo is running. He's a dark horse and doesn't have a chance in you-know-what to win this thing. And something occurs, an event occurs, without giving away the story, that finds these two strange bedfellows having to make nice. And they find a way that they can stay relevant and save themselves, in the politician's case, save his campaign and possibly win, and in the newspaper's case, save it from a certain death and possibly go on in another form or not. And as a result, as you can imagine, with any news organization teaming up, if you will, with a politician, I mean, integrity goes out the window, ethics go out the window on both sides of the equation. And we hope, hilarity ensues. It's meant to be a romp. Hopefully people walk away with this with something to think about. But at the same time, I want people to have a good time, and I hope they do.
All right, so goal number one for you is to entertain, not to make a point?
I would say so. Oh, yeah,
okay.
Definitely. This
okay.
is you're supposed to go and have a good time, and I hope people do.
Dave, I had a conversation with a conservative columnist for the Daily Caller named Matt Lewis, whose new book is called Too Dumb to Fail, and it's his commentary as a conservative about the trouble that the Republican Party in general has gotten into and the reasons that he sees it as essentially failing and how it can change. He started writing the book several years ago, and of course, in the course of this interview, the book is just out now, he said, I could never have dreamed that Donald Trump would be the candidate for when Too Dumb to Fail comes out. And since that interview with Matt Lewis, I've probably spoken to two or three people in the theater community who told me, boy, we didn't know when we were creating this that Donald Trump would be there. I mean, it's almost too perfect for all of you who are launching new productions right now, the farce versus reality thing. Do you find that sort of a funny coincidence there?
Yeah, absolutely, and a welcome one for sure, because the focus of the nation, of course, is on this election and the characters that are running for president, particularly on the Republican side. And the character who's running for governor in this case is a millionaire businessman, brash, loud, and obnoxious. This was written in 2011, and you might recall there was a 2010 gubernatorial election involving Andrew Cuomo and Carl Paladino. You might say he sort of fits that bill a little bit. I'm not going to say that the seed wasn't planted by Mr. Paladino, but this character is sort of taken to the extreme. At the same time, I mean, Donald Trump has just gone beyond everyone's expectations, and the timing really couldn't be more perfect for this production.
And in your show, Dave, you say the gubernatorial candidate is an auto dealer?
Yes.
And he's loud?
Loud, brash.
I can't think of anything that doesn't ring a bell, but I'm sure something else will.
He's large.
Oh, he's large. Okay, I get you.
Larger than life.
Okay. Jeff, how much is Dave going to see his creation acted out on stage pretty faithfully. Because what I find very interesting here is I called Dave when I didn't even know you were doing the Prestitutes. I knew you were involved in theater, but I think everybody turned around and said, wait, Dave Andreotta has a show? And what Dave went on to tell me, Jeff, is that in many ways he's going to the show to see what it's like this weekend.
Exactly.
It has been in your capable hands. It's been in the hands of the company that's creating it. How much is he going to see it exactly as he expects and wrote it, and how much tinkering did
Well, I think only that? David can answer that question.
Okay.
But Dave and I and the producers sat down early on in the process before we even started rehearsals and auditions, and I picked Dave's brain about the kind of people that he wanted to see and the kind of direction he wanted the show to go in. But after that, he has been pretty much hands-off. I mean, I've asked him a few questions via email, that sort of thing, but nothing major. He has tried to stay away from it as much as humanly possible and let us do what we need to do. But with any show, once it's on the page, it becomes the job of the director and the actor to interpret it the way they see it. And sometimes even the way the director sees it is different than the way the actor sees it. And no way is decidedly better. It becomes a melding of a cooperation between the script and the director and the actor, and it all comes together. And hopefully it'll come together well this time.
Dave, I mean, are they making you buy a ticket to your own show?
No, I am allowed to go see the show anytime.
Nice.
I have a couple of comp tickets for opening night. At the same time, I actually just bought several tickets for myself and some friends and some family this morning. So I'm happy to support the cause.
Okay, well, you can go with Dave, maybe sit next to him in the audience
there
watching his own show. Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at the Muck, MUCCC.org, if you want to check out more. Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 7:30, and the Sunday matinee of the Prestitutes is at 1 p.m. Dave Andreotta is my guest via phone in his native Canada, where he's joining us to talk about his new show, The Prestitutes, but you might know his work from The Democrat and Chronicle. And I want to pivot to your colleagues, but first let me ask you, Dave, this particular performance and this show that you wrote, without having seen it, it's hard for me to sort of make any assumptions, but I think it's a little gutsy for you to write about the industry you're currently in. You've got to have a good relationship with your colleagues and your superiors, because in some ways, it is a farce, I'm sure, as you say, but you're still taking a little bit of liberty and maybe poking a little bit at some of the cartoonish aspects of the industry. Were there any points that you were trying to make with this show about where your industry currently is?
Yeah, I would say that, I don't know if gutsy is the right word, and I'll tell you why, because I think that everyone in the newspaper industry knows what's happening and knows that it's undergoing a sea change right now, and anyone who's denying that is living in a dream world. So I think what I was trying to do is simply take some of the anxiety that was being felt at the time in 2011. I mean, there's still anxiety today.
Yep.
There is a huge shift going on in that industry. Not quite as bad as 2011. In 2011, we saw newspapers in Denver, Colorado close. We saw the San Diego Union Tribune was on the ropes. Philly lost a newspaper. Detroit was losing print production. Newspapers were closing down left and right. And that's essentially what I was trying to capture, is the angst of that time. And again, there still is a lot of anxiety about the industry today. So I don't know that I was trying to necessarily poke fun or needle, but use that as a backdrop to tell this story. Really, I think what people will recognize, people who are in the newspaper industry, will recognize when they see the show, if and when they see the show, is the anxiety and worry and concern of some of the older journalists in the newsroom, particularly the editor and an old veteran grizzled political reporter who just can't adjust to the speed of the new age. And in fact, it is the speed of the new age that gets them into some trouble throughout this. But it's their inability to see where the future lies that is supposed to be funny.
All right, Dave, and you get one softball, and you don't come on this program for softballs, and listeners don't typically appreciate softballs, but I will identify this one in advance as a softball when I ask you, what is it that you think your company, and in particular the Democrat and Chronicle, is doing well when it comes to trying to adjust to this change and to stay afloat?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, a few years ago, and you know, there will be people who will argue with me on this one, but a few years ago, Gannett and the Democrat and Chronicle introduced a paywall. Absolutely necessary. News wasn't free before. It stands to reason that it shouldn't be free in the future. The biggest single mistake I think the newspaper industry ever made was to start giving away its product free online.
Free
if you
content.
Don't value your own product enough to not want to offer it for free, you can't expect people to pay for it.
Agree.
So I think that was a huge step in the right direction, even though it caused some growing pains. And we saw a backlash on that, not just at the Democrat and Chronicle and through Gannett, but industry-wide. Gannett was, I think, a leader on that in moving to that paywall and getting out of it, and it took the brunt of it, some of the backlash. I think there's that. You'll see that we are responding, I think, to news a lot quicker than we used to. That sometimes comes with compromises, some sacrifice. We are getting news online quicker than ever, responding to breaking news stories. Those stories may still be what we would have called years ago incomplete. You know, you can't write the whole story in a matter of 15 minutes, but at least it's there. We're ready to update people. People feel like they can come to the DNC to get breaking news, as opposed to filing at the end of a day, 7 p.m. deadline time, and wait for the real story in tomorrow's paper. We update stories now throughout the day. A lot of reporters are doing and excelling at video production, which is another big seller and a selling point in the electronic media, particularly on phones. I mean, who would have thought that people would be watching video on a 2-inch by 3-inch screen? But there's a lot of demand for it. So I think those three things, responding to news quicker and getting stories up online faster, introducing the paywall, and responding with video are three things that I think Gannett and the Democrat and Chronicle are really doing well to stay ahead of that curve.
And maybe the Buffalo Star could learn from. We're talking to Dave Andreotta, who created the fictional Buffalo Star for The Prestitutes, which opens this weekend. 4 shows and 4 chances to see it this weekend at the Muck, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. M-U-C-C-C, the Muck, muck.org, or everyonestheater.com for more information on The Prestitutes. Jim Memmott is not only a veteran journalist, but someone who was a senior editor at the Democrat and Chronicle. And I'm curious to know, Jim, are you going to go see the show? Are you curious to see how Dave depicts, this farcical newsroom?
Keep in mind, I think I represent that old grizzled editor resisting change at every opportunity. So I think I may pick at the show.
Okay.
And just to keep people out and away from their cell phones. But in an act of bravery, I actually went to one of the readings of Dave's show. And despite myself, I liked it. And you have to keep in mind, Dave isn't as brave as you think he is. Newspaper people spend most of their time complaining about newspapers and their bosses. And so he's just putting out to the public what happens behind the closed doors all the time. But nonetheless, he's terribly wrong. And his bold defense of the paywall is simply going to make all of Rochester mad.
And Dave doesn't like to make anyone mad.
No, yeah, Dave has no courage. So I think David Andreotta is done.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
That's the proclamation.
Yes, done. D-O-N-E, done.
Julia, what, from your perspective as senior engagement editor and someone who is part of trying to reach new audiences and trying to stay in front of a changing readership. What did you think when you heard Dave at a show like this? Did you think, oh man, I hope he's not knocking us from the inside here?
Yeah. See, I might add, I am also David's immediate supervisor too. So
oh dear.
I am the boss
dun, dun,
here.
Right.
And you know, I'm proud of him for what he's done, because it, really the discussion shouldn't be about saving a newspaper. And I think that's what everybody wants to make this. It's about saving a newspaper. But what he's doing, and newspaper reporters, I think, are among the humblest reporters on the planet. They just don't like to look at themselves and talk about themselves when they really should be. This is not about saving newspapers. It's about saving news. You know, we are in a very transformative age for a lot of industries, but the news industry in particular is a serious one because it is about our democracy. It's not just about entertainment. It's not just about the breaking news, and it's about keeping our civic lives healthy. And if we don't talk about the demise of news and what's happening to news, then it's going to go away before we know it.
We will see in the Prestitutes just how closely tied this fictional paper and this fictional gubernatorial candidate become, and what compromises they make. But for those who are cynical about the state of modern journalism, that it leans one way or the other, or depending on the outlet or where you're going, you're going to get a particular viewpoint. I mean, of course, everyone has viewpoints, but there are some expectation that certain news organizations won't challenge this candidate, won't challenge that candidate. You know, just this weekend, the Democrat and Chronicle ran a very stern editorial that I'm sure City Hall probably didn't like very much. And Julie, if anybody didn't see it, can you tell us a little bit about why you wrote what you wrote?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Democrat and Chronicle and newspapers around the country, one of the functions is to bring together, bring community and civic leaders in to meet with the editorial board on a fairly regular basis. And this has happened, you know, I've only been with the newspaper for a year and a half now, but it has happened since the beginning of time, yeah, as far as I know. And the idea behind that is that, you know, in order to fully understand a lot of issues, you need to know a lot of the nuances. You know, a reporter can sit down and write 500, 1,000 words about a story for that day and still not be able to fit everything in that helps you understand that issue. So the editorial boards tend to bring in people who are community or civic leaders and regularly just chat with them about a broad variety of issues, usually the topic of the day, but other ones as well, to try to get a sense of their vision, their ideas, what their expectations are. And that helps us, you know, and then we talk to someone else and get sort of a big picture of what's really going on in the community. And no, we don't sit down and write thousands of words about it. But every now and then when we feel like, you know what, the community needs to understand all of the interlying issues, the way things come together. And so we put that together in our analysis. We have a viewpoint as an editorial board. We don't anticipate everyone will agree with it, but we have, you know, the facts that we base our opinions on, and then that leads to greater discussion, whether you agree with us or not. So this has sort of been a time-honored way of keeping our community healthy, keeping democracy in Rochester healthy. And you know, we regularly have people, you name it, if they're in the news, they come in. We rarely have people say no. And in fact, the mayor has not said no. But for 2 months now, we've been asking her to come in and chat with us because, as you know, there are a few issues.
Yes, indeed.
And the first few requests were simply ignored. There was no answer. And then since that time, there's been a lot of, well, we're looking at her schedule. We're looking at the schedule. We're, you know, that's the response. So it's not a no. But at some point, so finally last week, I contacted them on behalf of the editorial board and said, you know, we are meeting this morning and we would like just a day, you know, give us a day or a rough idea, anything. And we did not, a message was taken and we did not, 2 days later, there was no response at all. So we felt it was important for people to understand that the mayor, although she is very communicative, you know, she writes essays once a month and we publish those essays because we feel it's important to get her viewpoint out there and her vision out there. And she speaks with our reporters. She holds press conferences. You see her at events all over the place. It's not like she's hiding in her office. And she does care about this community and she cares about the people she represents. But she is missing a big part of communicating if she thinks just putting her viewpoint out there without having other perspectives weighed in against that and having it analyzed by people who are very familiar with what's going on in the news. And you know, we've had so many people in the last couple of months come in and talk about their view of her vision and her viewpoint. We would love to be able to say to her, well, what do you say? How do you respond to this? How we want to get her perspective. And we're just getting zero interaction, and that's just not good for our community.
So if you missed the editorial, it was just a pointed commentary that said, you know, essentially, we didn't really want to make this public, but we're getting no response from City Hall. We want our readership to know this is important to us on your behalf, and we're not getting it from City Hall. It's the same kind of, I think it's the same kind of moment where that you see on the presidential side. You saw in the last couple of weeks, you see veteran journalists saying it's been 220 some odd days since Hillary Clinton has had a news conference, an open news conference. And a lot of her supporters have said, well, but she does interviews and she does, you know, rope line meet and greets. But those are controlled and they are different than mm-hmm. an open give and take with the press. And that's why I think with the editorial board, it's the same kind of thing where, yes, she submits an essay. That's one thing. Or she shows up at an event, that's one thing. But to sit down with the editorial board, it's an entirely different matter, and it's important in the same way that open news conferences are. So anyway, I wanted to draw attention to that because I thought in light of Dave's show, I just thought it was interesting timing for those who may see the show and go, well, what's going on? What's happening to journalism? Or is it in the tank? Or are they in bed with folks? And I thought you made it, if anybody ever wondered locally this weekend, I thought that was a pretty clear dividing line. What was the readership's response, by the way? Because you said City Hall has not responded to that. Is that correct?
City Hall has not yet responded, but for 2 days in a row, it was among the top 10 hits on our website and social media. It was I'll let the comments speak for themselves.
Okay. Wise. Well, let's get our only break of the hour. When we come back, I want to talk to Director Jeff Moon about more about the show, The Prestitutes, which is coming to the Muck this weekend. And I want to ask Jim Memmott his thoughts on, you know, you heard Dave Andreotta say that in this fictional paper, they're dealing with the speed and demands of modern journalism. And there are a lot of veteran journalists who are frustrated by that. And there's some truth to that, as Dave said. As Jim said, there's also some farce in Dave's show. But I want to ask Jim when we come back, just his own point of view over what has changed for the better in newsrooms with technology and what has not changed for the better, and whether we should be concerned at that demand of speed. Are we losing at least some of the time required to you know, go out and conduct actual journalism? So let's get our only break, and we'll come right back with our panel talking about The Prestitutes with Dave Andreotta and more next. Coming up in our second hour, East Rochester is getting ready to teach a new class called Life 101. And it's not only going to be offered for seniors, it will be required for graduating. Life 101 is a response to some of the feedback they heard from students who graduated and felt like they weren't really ready for the real world. From financial literacy to college readiness and job interview skills. Talk to you next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday night at 7:30, The Muck is the home of the new show, The Prestitutes, written by Dave Andreotta. You know Dave as a columnist for The Democrat and Chronicle, and he's moonlighting in the theater community with his first show, The Prestitutes, that tells the story of this fictional dying paper, The Buffalo Star. And you're going to have a chance to see it with four different showings, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at The Muck at 7:30, and Sunday, the matinee at 1 p.m. Dave is on the phone with us, taking some time to visit with us on the show from Canada. And also in studio with us is the director of The Prestitutes, Jeff Moon, alongside Julie Phillip, who is the senior engagement editor for The Democrat and Chronicle, and Jim Memmott, journalist with The Democrat and Chronicle. He is the remarkable Rochester columnist. He's a professor at the University of Rochester and a longtime senior editor. And Jim, the speed side, are we losing some of the time required to go out and commit journalism, conduct real journalism?
I think we're probably losing a little bit. And that may only be because newspaper staffs are smaller than they once were. And so areas in the community that were closely followed before can't be as closely followed. But you have to keep in mind that when I came to the Times Union in 1980, we had six editions. That is, we were updating constantly throughout the day. And so the newsroom of today, where you're putting something up online almost immediately after it's happened is not that different. What's different is the technology and, in some cases, the toys. The cell phone has changed everything. I was thrown into reporting duty when a big milk truck smashed into the fountain in Geneseo, toppling our beloved bear. And so I call in with my iPhone, and John Hann, a wonderful writer and editor, is on the other line. And he says, can you do a video? This would be like asking me to do a handstand and walk across the tightrope of Niagara Falls.
I think that's a no.
But to my everlasting credit, I tried. And so, and then I thought to myself, well, how do I send this? And he said, well, you do something with Google. And I said, oh, heavens, John, what? Well, they finally sent it in, and there's this genius at the other end up there at DNC Digital and their new swank offices. And he, Scott Norris, and suddenly I realized I had done a video. There it was, people talking over, and there was the bear lying in its hole, and there was the wrecked fountain. And I thought to myself, holy cow, this journalism is kind of fun. And so if you could teach an old dog new tricks, it would take a lot of education. I'd love to be doing it now.
And I think he gets at the point, you know, where David in his play has all these grumbly journalists. And I think if you think about back then when you were first, suddenly the job you've been doing forever and ever, suddenly you have to learn all these new tools that, you know, people just don't like change. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. So suddenly you have this toy box in front of you, but nobody's happy about that. But I think that that's changing, that I think people are really starting to embrace that, that, you know, we just made a podcast in partnership with WXXI. So instead of a radio newsroom, it's an audio newsroom. We're making video. You don't need to be a television station anymore. In fact, a lot of younger news audiences don't ever turn a TV on. Don't subscribe to cable or satellite. They get it on their phones. And so I think that a lot of that grumbling is starting to subside as journalists realize, well, hey, you know, I don't have the same job, but I could have an even cooler job if I start to learn these things.
And I hope this goes without saying, but all the toys, in Jim's words, that he is now finding himself surprisingly able to deploy with a little bit of training, they can be valuable to reach people in different ways, as long as the journalists who are using them, their first training is still in real journalism. And that starts, I think, at the educational level. I mean, Jim, when you talk to students who are considering a career in journalism now, there are more considerations because of all of this that goes in. More requirements of your time, more requirement on understanding how to use different technology, et cetera. And you still want them to be great journalists. What do you tell students when they're considering this career?
Well, you can't tell them the normal career path. We used to always think of it as a kind of print career path. You would go down to Corning. They've got a nice little paper there. That sounds condescending. I don't mean it that way.
No, I understand.
Then they would come up to Rochester, and they would begin covering cops, and then they might go and cover City Hall, and then they're off to the big time. That doesn't happen necessarily. But in some ways, you work with them on their writing skills first and their reporting skills, and then you tell them, wait a minute, you know how to do this already, the other things. They grew up with a cell phone. They've grown up with videos. They know how to do all of that. And so then you just say, put it to use, and let's create a web page. Let's tell the story in a different way. And I think that Julie's point about the podcast, Gary and Veronica's podcast, is an astonishing way to tell a story, to look back on a mysterious death from 30 years ago in a cornfield, and to get that much human empathy and concern. And to, you couldn't really tell that story in print the way they told that in audio.
But you couldn't tell it just with the toys of audio. You had to tell it with real journalism. It started with Gary Craig, one of the best journalists I have ever met, and Veronica Volk, who is absolutely first and foremost interested in getting things right and having respect for the process. So, and look, I sound like a homer in saying it, but you couldn't do that without real journalism, right, Jim?
No, especially because both Gary and Veronica knew the rules. And it's interesting how they approach people, how they in some ways got people to talk, and how in other ways they respected people's silence. And that all comes from, I think, their background in reporting and in their human empathy.
Well, I'm seeing some feedback online, which I'm going to get to in a minute. Let me ask Dave and Jeff. You know, Jim sounds way too reasonable to fit in your show, Dave. You know, maybe he isn't the model for the obstreperous, the recalcitrant old guard. You know, tell me a little bit more about the characters and the prostitutes and how un-Jim Memet-like they are.
Right. Well, their problem is they have an inability to understand that news needs to be delivered in different ways. They got into this business because they're writers and they're reporters, and they're those two things first. They're not filmmakers. They're not podcasters. They never got into radio. They never wanted to do broadcast. They are in love with the written word, and there's still, of course, a place for the written word in modern newspapers. And in fact, I don't even know if we're calling newspapers newspapers anymore. We're just calling them that for lack of a better term. I mean, we just, at the DNC, the front of our building says, you know, DNC Digital, and on the front on the front window on Main Street, you'll see a television studio that is very close to up and running. It may even be up and running now while I've been away for a few days. So the people in the prostitutes are obstinate and unable to make that change. And there have been people in the industry who have been unable to make the leap. That being said, I've also known a great number of people, older and younger, but let's focus on the older because they've been around longer and they've been doing one thing one way for a longer period of time, who have made these leaps. I mean, Gary Craig, just to point back to him, because I agree with you, Evan, he is one of the best journalists I've ever known and ever worked with. He was an early adopter to Twitter. That's something even I didn't see the need for Twitter.
I thought, what a waste of time. I just couldn't
get my head around it.
Yeah.
Now I can't live without it. Gary was quick to adapt to Facebook. He's now doing podcasts. He does videos. And I got to tell you, when I do videos, which I don't do as often as I would like, and I'd like to do more, and I'm looking forward to this television studio, and I keep saying television. I don't even know if it's called television.
Yeah, television's like so 2004.
It's a podcast studio.
Yeah, yeah.
The creative process is so much fun. It's a real, real joy to tell stories in different ways. And what I like about the podcasts and the videos is you're actually telling not just the same story in video format or podcast format. You're telling, as the written form, you're telling a story, the same story, but in a different way that complements the written form. And that can be a whole new challenge, and it's a lot of fun. But that's something you'll never see the folks in the prostitutes do.
But Dave, I don't know about the prostitutes, but in the real life newsrooms I have seen, what tends to provoke the opprobrium of veteran journalists is, at least in my experience, it's not usually this idea that they don't want to learn new technology. It's that they feel there is a threat to their ability to actually conduct journalism the way they have always viewed it. In other words, they're worried that the actual product is going to be diminished in some way. And I think what Jim and Julie and you are explaining is that these two things don't have to be mutually exclusive, that the product doesn't have to be diminished. But I think most of the time the concern is not, I don't want to deal with technology. It's, I want the product to be as good as it used to be, and I'm worried it can't be. Julie, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to add to that.
It's
not even just about the presentation. If you think of digital, it's all about data. And so as we really, you know, Democrat and Chronicle and Gannett are really starting to focus in on that investigative reporting, we have great Gary Craig again, but we have a number of other great investigative reporters. And I would say David Andreotta is a great investigative journalist as well, that we have access now to databases where we can look at data and ways that we have never been able to do to make our stories stronger and to find problems that we would not have known existed if we weren't able to accumulate all of this data. So it's just, you know, we can sit and complain that things are different, but in many ways, they're different in a good way. And that's what I think the DNC has done extraordinarily well, although change takes time and transition can be bumpy, that those are the things that have been highlighted all along. It just takes some time to get there. And you know, if you go to Rock Data now, we have a number of databases that are searchable, and that kind of information was just not at our fingertips when we were doing investigative journalism 10 years ago.
Evan, if I could jump in for 1 second, you talked about the fear that the product will somehow be diminished. Let me just tell you a problem that I still struggle with when the two worlds collide. When I go to an interview, particularly like a press conference, I don't cover a lot of breaking news anymore in my role as a columnist, but I still like to keep on top of things, and every once in a while I do find myself having to report on breaking news. And one of the expectations is that you're tweeting out that news as it's coming out. So there are new revelations being made by the subject of the press conference. And the Democrat and Chronicle, and like a lot of news organizations, I would say all nowadays, expect the reporters to be tweeting at the same time that, as the news is coming out from the subject of the press conference. And I find myself still wanting to take notes. And I'm sitting there taking the notes in the way I used to, and I'm falling behind on my tweeting, if you will. but you know, there are some people who have mastered the use of Twitter. Some reporters have mastered the use of Twitter, where the tweets then become their notes.
Yeah, I would say John Hand is a perfect example of that.
Right, and that is where the two worlds collide, and I can't find that happy medium. So I would be in the old guard. I'd be with the Stan Lipsky of the editor of the Prestitutes of the Buffalo Star. In that category, and but I hope I excel in other ways. But that is just an example of exactly what you're talking about that I've struggled with, and I know other reporters have too.
Let me bring Jeff Moon, the director of the Press Dudes, back in. Go ahead, Jeff.
One of the major themes of the show, in amongst all the laughs, hopefully, is that journalism should be a public service, should be deemed a public service, and it is a very serious endeavor. And all of the things, whether you use Twitter or Facebook or digital or video or whatever, that should be the bedrock of why you do what you do.
Public service.
Yeah. To not just, there's a substantive difference between content of something like BuzzFeed, where you get the top 10 list of this, that, or the other thing, and investigative journalism. And part of the problem with the Prestitutes' old guard is that they automatically equate, Twitter and Facebook and BuzzFeed with that kind of pablum, mm-hmm. that doesn't have any substance to it or any real ethics to it. Well, it's just out there to make money.
And you say any real ethics to it. The interesting thing is, you can still go back and read Michael Lewis, the journalist Michael Lewis, who, listeners, you know him. He wrote Moneyball. He wrote Big Short. He wrote a piece he went to the Columbia School of Journalism, I think, in 1993. And it was called J School Confidential, but it was a takedown of J Schools at the time because, he viewed it as this world that was not realistic, that the ivory tower was way too unrealistic. And he reminded them, there's no actual license. You don't need a license to practice journalism. That's what sets this field apart. And so it's still worth reading. Go back and read that. But to Jeff, to the point that you make there, I mean, I guess technically anybody can practice journalism. You don't need a license, and there's no rule on where journalism ends up, whether it's on a blog or on Facebook or in the Democrat and Chronicle or on WXXI radio or in a podcast or elsewhere. It sounds like, at the very least, the Prestitutes carry some measure of respect for the craft, for the importance of journalism.
Oh, absolutely. And that goes toward, David and, where he comes from.
Well, we've got a few minutes left here. So let me ask Jim then. Jim Memmott is the journalist at the table who, I didn't say you were there at the very beginning of journalism.
Gutenberg and I were buddies.
I didn't say.
Right, we hung out. He's a great, great guy. Jim, Goots, we call them Goots.
Jim, we see some papers in some cities going to 3 days a week. We see some papers going entirely digital. What do you expect, 10 years from now? What will the newspaper industry look like, Jim?
I'm always asked this question. I think the trend is probably certainly away from print. And print maybe will become a kind of boutique part of the media. It'll be sad for me, but
it's sad for me.
But I think that's probably going to happen. I do think that probably the Democrat and Chronicle, like the New York Times and everybody else, has to figure out a way to get more revenue from digital, because you've got to pay for reporters and so on. And David's point about the paywall, although I'm teasing him about him, is absolutely true. I also think, though, you've got a group of young people now who are better informed than I ever was. And they get their news in strange ways. They're certainly led to it by Facebook and by Twitter and by Instagram. But they get their news and they know their news and they worry about the world in a way I didn't know about the world. So I think we'll be okay. Newspapers have always been in a state of decline. Morale has always been at an all-time low, but I think we'll muddle through. I'm counting on Julie to save the world, but I think I'm out of that business.
Thanks,
Julie,
Jim.
Julie, no pressure on you, but 10 years from now, are there going to be print editions?
I think something will exist in print, but no, I don't think that will be the main source. If you look at what young people are doing today, it's not print, but it's not television. Is NPR going to be in existence? Is radio going to be in existence?
Yeah.
They're not listening to the radio. So I'm excited to see what's happening in 10 years. I have 20-somethings in my life, and they are very well-informed, very engaged. They get, maybe because they're related to me, they get the difference between journalism and all that other stuff that's out there. And so I have, I've dealt a lot with the young professionals in this town, and there is a lot of interest in good journalism, engagement. Nobody wants journalism to go away. We just need to change the word newspaper and find a new word. We need to, I'm excited, but I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what journalism is going to be in 10 years, but I know journalism will be here.
It'll be valued in the same way, and hopefully it'll still be supported. Dave Andreotta, I know you said first and foremost you want to entertain with your farce, The Prestitutes, but beyond the entertainment, what's top of your mind that you hope they walk out of there thinking about the industry?
I hope they, to piggyback off of Julie's point, I hope the audience walks out and realizes how important good journalism is, and that it doesn't necessarily matter the medium. It's the message and the quality of the reporting, I think, that matters. And we are going to see changes, more changes in the newspaper industry going forward. I think Jim and Julie both had a good answers to that question of where it will be in the future without having a crystal ball in front of them. But that's what I think I'd like audiences to come away with, to think about what they value in their in the media in their lives, whether it's newspaper, television, or radio, and to think about the quality and the public service of the craft, because it really truly is. And even though you're right when you say that you don't need a license to be a journalist, there are certain principles and there are certain ethics that guide the craft and make good journalism good.
Well, Jeff Moon is the director. I'll see you on Sunday. My wife and I are going to come to the Sunday matinee.
Fantastic.
And for those who have never been to the Muck, it's on Atlantic. It's not far from Starry Nights.
Right.
And it's not that big. You've got four shows. You've got a chance to see it if you can go to muck.org, M-U-C-C-C.org, or everyonestheater.com for tickets. Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday at 7:30 for The Prestitutes, Sunday at 1 p.m. So I'll see you at 1 p.m. What do you love about the space? How does it fit here? What are people going to see if this is their first time at the Muck?
Well, Muck started about, 6-7 years ago. It's a renovated church. It has been remodeled numerous times, and they've done a really good job with the space. It's a very intimate space. It only holds about 80 people. And it's, you get a real close interaction with the actors and us with the audience, okay? It's not a space where you're sitting 20 feet away from the action that's on stage. So it really is an intimate experience, and that's what we really like about it.
And 30 seconds, what do you hope your theatergoers are going to take from this show?
I hope they're going to have essentially a good time, but at the same time, like David, what shape does news have right now, and what should it have? Is it and who's driving that change is a big theme in the show.
I think somebody's going to come out and with the tagline large.
Maybe. Yeah. You're going to have to come see it and find out.
Jeff Moon's the director of The Prestitutes. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for being here, and good luck with the show. I'll see you out there this weekend.
Great.
Jim Memmott, longtime local journalist, and you can find him as the Remarkable Rochester columnist. Thank you, Jim. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Julie Phillip, great talking to you, the senior engagement editor for The Democrat and Chronicle. Nice having you back
here. Great to be here. Thanks.
And Dave Andreotta, you can go back to, I don't know what you do in Canada. I know you like hunt and gather up there. But whatever you do when you're there, you can go back to that. Go back to your vacation. We'll see you in Rochester this weekend. And congratulations on The Prestitutes.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Short break. Question for you. When you were in high school, were you taught financial literacy or life skills? A local high school is now requiring that for graduation, and we're going to talk about why next time.